Okay, we've been talking about violence against women. We've been talking about policy issues. And the last little bit we want to talk about is access. Access is a very important part. We have our local rock star, Sharon Bagwan, to talk with us a bit about access to knowledge. So applause is for Sharon.
Anyway, just to keep your hands warm. Okay, this is just going to really draw on FemLink Pacific's experiences over the last 8 years and to try and make the connection with the particularly the last speaker about why we should also get involved in policy and why we should know about what's happening in the ICT environment. And it also, as a matter of, well, not only why are you doing this work, but how do you know you're on the right track, builds on the findings from the People's Communication for Development Research that we were partners with ISIS Manila International and took over between 2005 and 2007, an opportunity to take a step back and really think about women's realities in our country, particularly the rural women, and the access to information and knowledge in order for them to be able to be part of their own political empowerment process. So what is access to knowledge about? Well, I really think it's more than about going to the library, but it's also about having the publications available in a format you can read, in the language you can understand. And I'd like to dwell a little bit on format. Let's remember here that we're not totally living in a homogenized, able-bodied world. Let's also think about women with disabilities and the formats that they need to be able to access information for their own empowerment, for their own political processes. Because too often I think we can get caught up in simply, as the movement, just only really thinking in an able-bodied manner. So I think that's one of the reasons why ICTs has the valuable opportunity to help bring women with disabilities, young women with disabilities, to the table with us. So knowledge is more than the library. It's about liberation. It's more than about opening a telecenter. Lots and lots of governments have sort of gotten on the bandwagon of, we will open a telecenter. It's like, well, where is it going to be positioned? How are women going to access the center? How are they going to be able to operate the computers? In our own country, we do have ethnic divisions because there's been a lot of telecentres being opened up in indigenous villages where non-indigenous women don't, you can't just walk in and access the telecentre. So those are the things that we need to be part of the planning, the design, the management, the evaluation. It's also about being able to negotiate around the politics and policies of technology. If we want to be part of the process, we do need to understand what's going on in the sector. We do need to be able to be informed to, in order to be engaged in the sector as well. And that often helps us in our advocacy around particularly ICT policy issues. It is also about, because we are doing a lot of work here about using internet, it's also about us being able to address the existing digital divide in our own communities and in our own countries. We must ensure that we're not going to exacerbate the divide between rural women, urban women, even within urban societies, women with internet access and women with, who don't. So we need to be cautious, I think, when we think about our own networking. And that's really one of the things, going back to the PC4D research, that in our country, when we talked to women about what was the most appropriate form of communication, information channels, let's not forget the good old-fashioned face-to-face conversations. Knowledge, information, and empowerment, they all go together. But so it is linked into the kind of information you receive, how you receive it, and that information to assist you in your own empowerment. Back in 1986, soon after the end of the decade for women, I sat in the YWCA office in Suva and read a publication by the International Women's Tribune Center that told me very clearly and very simply what the Nairobi forward-looking strategies were all about. That was my political awakening. So it was a simple publication, and that's really been the inspiration for a lot of our media communication work, making what is being discussed in the global arena, in international forums, available, accessible to women in their communities, making it real to their lives. It's about, in a very practical way, In, as I said, you know, in the interpersonal communications, when committee meetings are held, it's very easy for people to say, oh, yes, we had women there, but where were they? Oh, usually they're in the back of the room. Usually the young women and the older women are in the kitchen. So were they there as active participants? So how do we move women and young women to the front of the room? So it's more than an invitation. How do we empower them to be part of that process of consultation? So it's also ensuring that they have the access to the information in order to engage, even at the most local level, even at the village level. And it's linked to women, peace, and human security. It's about providing that safe space in which you can ask the questions, access the information. It's about investing time and effort in the process of delivery. So it's more than just about producing something, but it's about also how you take it to the women and ensure that they're able to be part of that gathering of the knowledge, and also at the same time being able to ask the questions that they want to ask. So it's also about access to communication. We need to address the media status quo. It's about putting women into the picture of information and media forms. But unfortunately, even since 1995, even since the Global Media Monitoring Project, we're still finding that women are 17%. Women still only make 17% of the news. So our work as FemLink is, yes, we will certainly put out a press release, but really, are we going to be just banging on the doors of the newsrooms all the time? So there is a need to mainstream, to work with the mainstream media, but I think we must also be providing strong media alternatives. And that's because we are seeing an increase in the number of women in newsrooms, but that's really not making a change in the type of content that we're getting. So we still need to challenge the media and communication status quo. And it is then about us taking the opportunity to make our own media. So it's time for a reality check time. How do we ensure, for example, that what we're doing today, what we're doing over the next couple of days into the future, is more than just about, I made a really nice program. It's more than just content production that features women. And I think that's what we've got to be really clear about. We're not just putting women in the picture, but we're getting to the underlying issues. Otherwise, we're just going to exacerbate what the mainstream is doing. Oh, yeah, I wrote a story about a rural woman. It was featured on page 12 of the newspaper. But did it talk about her, or did it just feature her? There's a big difference. So we need to look at the political realities of women in the content. Why is she having to stand in the rain and gather food? Why is she standing for hours and hours in the river collecting shellfish? Why are women still dying when they have to try and get to a health center? Yeah? So it's those kind of issues. It's also about enabling women, young women, and women with disabilities to access the technology, as I said earlier, to produce their content. Let's not fall into the trap of being the producers for those women. Let's enable the process to enable them to make their content. It links into the women power and decision-making commitments. If we're talking about bringing it into the women's movement, let's also reclaim and remind ourselves, what are those commitments that have been made to us? In 1995, Chat mentioned the Beijing Platform for Action. 189 UN member states adopted the Beijing Platform for Action. So what are they doing about it? Yeah. What does it mean beyond FTEX and AWID? How are we going to build on that rich history of women who helped bring about Section J? So very quickly, let's also reclaim Section J as part of this process, because I think it's really been lost along the way. And in our own region, it's being watered down quite a bit. In the process of WSIS, in the process of even in the Pacific, where we struggled to get a little bit of women gender equality in what's called the Pacific Digital Strategy, we had to fight to get that kind of information. And I have to say, it was a very lonely battle. I was doing it because of community radio, that if we didn't get that space into these regional, international, national policies, you're not even going to have a chance to even think about community radio. You're not even going to have a chance to think about having access to the internet in a way that's affordable and accessible to a lot more people than ourselves. We need to, as I said, those 189 governments and UN agencies responsible for advancing Section J, let's start making them accountable. Many of us were part of the different expert group meetings on women in media, women in ICTs in the lead up to the Beijing Plus 10 process. And what happened when we got to New York? It didn't even feature on the agenda. We have to hold the UN system accountable for putting it into the agenda and what happens next. Yeah, we have to be accountable to the content. It talks about using technologies. I mean, that was the most liberating thing about Section J. Back in 95, already women had the vision about the potential for technology for us to make our content, to portray women in the way we are, in all our diversities. So we need to reclaim that. Very quickly, we are storytellers. We are writers. We're in front of the camera. We're behind the camera. We have such a diverse range of roles to play and to claim as well. So let's not forget that. We do have allies within the mainstream media, but let's also build the women's media movement as well. This is just an example of what some of the work we're doing in the Pacific and how we're enabling women, or women I'm being empowered to pick up a tape recorder and tell their story, to get on the radio and use the radio to talk about young women's issues, to get behind the camera. So it is important for us to be able to recognize what we have the capacity and the potential to do. Just a couple of reality checks, though. Let's not forget some of the very practical things that we need in order to move this forward. If we're talking about using technology, it's not cheap. As much as we talk about appropriate technology, we need to ensure parallel to all of this resource mobilization. And so let's not just get caught up in talking about our wish list, but let's get really practical. And what is happening here at FTEX, what is bringing the practitioners, the young women, you know, the different forms of producers, is a great model, and it's something that I'm so happy to be proud of, because it's something that we're trying to do at home. How do we put women and the media and the technology together and be productive and show it can be done in 3 days? Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, what needs to change? It's really about getting serious about looking at the political sphere. The governments need to be held accountable. The UN has got to be held accountable. The global women's movement has also got to be held accountable. Why is it that there are only so few of us still talking about Section J, talking about women media and ICTs and policies? So we also need to be to collectively remain committed. Isis Manila Tessa is here, so I'm not going to speak too much about PC4D, because I think it also has some very practical recommendations about really at the end of the day what it means. How do we ensure technology is about the empowerment of women, particularly at the grassroots and rural communities? Thank you very much.